This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three, our third and final live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. It is a Wednesday, and we still have one more hour to go up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We will be joined in our next segment by Keith Stewart from Hilton Head, South Carolina, ahead of the RBC Heritage, another signature event on the PGA Tour. But also, of course, for his recap of what he saw with his very own two eyes at Augusta National Golf Club. And Rory finally having his moment at the Masters to complete the career Grand Slam. Then to end out this hour, we'll break down the play-in tournament games that we have. First in Chicago, the Bulls and the Heat. Then in California's capital, out in Sactown, it's time to, you know what, Kings and, I don't know if I could say what I was going to say, that's why I didn't say it. The Kings and the Mavericks play in our nightcap. Can I say blank up on this show? Sactown blank up? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like the beam, man. You get it? Sure. Big party out there. Yep, sure.
Yeah, for sure. Light the beam at all points. DRS, yesterday we asked the public who wins the play-in tourney games. The public did back both of our favorites. The Warriors around a 7-point favorite. The Magic around a 5-point favorite. They were correct in the money line parlay around a minus 105 price if you wanted to back both of the favorites. They got that right. The Magic did cover. The Warriors did not in their matchup against the Memphis Grizzlies. How about the public today? Who wins the play-in tournament games to live to see another day in postseason action on Friday evening? Question for all of you and Fade the Public. Who will win tonight's NBA play-in tournament games? Yesterday, 65 votes. Today, 92. Public is absolutely loving some postseason action around the association. And Donnie, it does appear that the public is really trying to figure out who wins the opening game of the night, which is basically a pick 'em between the Bulls and the Heat. But most of the public backing Sacramento tonight at home with the Kings as a 4.5-point favorite. Who will win tonight's NBA play-in tourney games on Sports Grid on Twitter? Bulls, Kings, slightly in front at 37%. Heat, Kings, not all that far behind at about 34%. Which way did Donnie vote in the Fade the Public poll?
I actually picked the Bulls and the Kings, but also we're talking about winning basketball games without the actual spread advantage. Now, the Bulls, and you take a look at them playing the Heat, there's not really a spread advantage. Just pick the winner there. But there is a spread advantage there that you see there in the Kings game tonight. And the reason we bring that up is last night, we're like, you know what? I don't know if Memphis can basically win it outright. I think they'll be very competitive with a slight chance to do that, but seven's just too much. You saw the final score. They were able to stay with inside that number. Now, granted, you can also have that game tonight between the Kings and the Mavericks where you can stay inside it, but the number much lower than 7, 7.5. So that's down to 4.5, 5, depending on where you're shopping at that point. So for me, I still do think the Kings possibly win, but I'm telling you, as this week is going on, looking at this game and the matchups here, low total in this one, I do think the Mavericks can hang around. So I do understand the fight between who's going to win that first game with the Bulls and the Heat, but also have that same feeling during that second game. Because again, we're not talking about a touchdown plus advantage on the line itself. You're talking within a possession or two to try to hang around. But my vote did go to the Bulls and the Kings at the 37%. So technically, I won't be fading the public.
I went Bulls and Mavericks. I am fading the public. Yeah. I love Dallas tonight. I think Dallas, led by Anthony Davis, has a great performance in Sacramento. Give me the 5, as I bet earlier this week. Give me the 4.5 right now. And heck, let's sprinkle on that money line as well. The main reason, DRS, for me It's Anthony Davis. Since he returned from his injury that he suffered in his Dallas debut, he has played in 8 games for the Mavs down the stretch. There was a time that maybe Dallas could flirt with the 8 seed. It became very apparent, DRS, entering our final 2 weeks of this NBA regular season. We were really trying to figure out playoff positioning in terms of who would be out of the play-in tournament in the Western Conference and who would be those 7-8 seeds. It wasn't like the Mavs or the Kings really could catch whoever really would falter into that 8 spot in the Western Conference standings. Maybe some home floor positioning between Sacramento and Dallas, but that was really all that we had at stake. I mentioned that Anthony Davis in his return, 8 games down the stretch, shouldn't play in every one for the Mavs as they still tried to ramp up his production and minutes. But in the 8 games he was out there for Dallas, the Mavericks won 5. I think Anthony Davis is the great equalizer to keep the Mavs within that spread tonight in Sacramento. And if they're going to keep it within a 5 or 4.5 point number, I think the Mavericks can pull off the outright upset.
Yeah, no, again, like I've had a simple train of thought all week long because I like Sacramento. I think they have a pretty good starting 5 here, even though, you know, made some trades and changes up, but they're talented and it's home court advantage, and that does mean a lot. But as I start to look at like the starting lineup here, somewhat healthy now for the Mavericks, got a couple games in, they have some veteran leadership that they can lean on, and taking the points doesn't seem like a bad idea. And also, it's not taking the points by like 245.5, like, well, there's going to be a million possessions to blow the doors off. We have a relatively low total here where you're expecting a 1 or 2 possession game in the fourth quarter, so why not take the points at this point, which makes the most sense. But also, like, talking around like these games as we have it in the content business and also in the gambling business, more meaningful games are usually a better situation across all sports here. We love it. It's like the bowl season for me. I get angry because a lot of teams don't really care about it. Some teams do. But when you make the college football playoff, like, everybody cares about it. Same thing in March Madness. Hey, expansion of the tournament, some people don't like because they like the traditional of, you know, 64, 68 teams, what you have now. But if you added more teams in, there's still meaningful games that you can bet on and handicap accordingly. The reason I'm bringing this up is, like, the NBA did do the expansion to have the playing rounds. Is it overkill at this point now? Because I'm not saying, like, we're talking about these games and like it and we'll bet on these and we get it. But we look at, like, the Eastern Conference, and it's already watered down. You have these teams like, man, does anybody care about them even playing, like, the Bulls tonight, you know, taking on the Heat at this point? Or even in the West Conference there. Like, the Mavericks, like, an afterthought. They traded Luka, and they're playing the Kings, who are relatively ineffective on a national landscape. Did we go too much with the playing rounds here at this point? Should it just be the top 8 and let's roll?
I think so, right? Why do you play 82 games to have to play 2 more to be the 8 seed who is going to take on the top seed and not really do it? I understand why they do it, right? It's money, it's extra TV revenue, all of that stuff. I love the first 4 in Dayton, but I think it proves why you don't need to expand anything around postseason action on the hardwood. We got a great game between the Grizzlies and the Warriors last night, but the first one was a 25-point blowout in favor of the Magic. Yeah, was it closer to 10 points for a good majority of the game? Sure. Was it ever really within a possession or two in the critical moments of that game? Not necessarily. And I will just say, DRS, these games tonight, I think, lack a little bit of that luster. Because these games tonight, of course, if you lose, your season is done. But even if you win, you got to then go on the road on a 48-hour span to more than likely be the underdog, to try to beat the team that played last night, to try to become the 8th seed, and then your reward is the 1 seed. It feels like a lot of hoops to jump through, if you will, and at times insignificant hoops to just be the 8 seed. Now, we have seen teams like the Miami Heat, for instance, who, of course, play tonight against the Chicago Bulls, use this time to build momentum and go on magical runs. So who are we to knock it? Feels very different, especially in the Eastern Conference. Really feels different even for the 8 seed in the Western Conference to have to take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. But that might be a statement on where the odds are and what we have seen this NBA season, play-in tournament or not.
Yeah, and again, it's more meaningful basketball. These guys are playing hard. You saw last night, it was like, hey, John Morant's upset. Like, I don't even know why I'm playing in these games, and I went out at this point. Or you saw Trae Young, like, we're always in the play-in. Let's just put us in the playoffs. This is ridiculous at this point. He's still going to play hard and look to get into the true playoffs when it's said and done. But it's just an interesting concept that they brought up a couple years ago.
Keith Stewart joins the show for a Masters recap next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
After one of the most memorable Masters we have seen in some time, ahead of a new week on the PGA Tour, Keith Stewart joins us live right here on this Wednesday morning on the Early Line on Sports Grid for not one but two segments. One, of course, to recap what we saw on a Sunday afternoon at Augusta National Golf Club. And as you see, Keith live in Hilton Head right now for the RBC Heritage, another signature event on the PGA Tour this upcoming week as well. Keith, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for being here on TEL.
Ben, Donnie, I couldn't think of a better place to be on a Wednesday morning. I mean, last week was pretty good. Let's get into it.
Yes, it certainly was, Keith. As we saw, what a Sunday it was at Augusta. The ups and downs, the peaks and valleys, a final round at the Masters, really indicative of what Rory McIlroy has dealt with in trying to win that career Grand Slam, finally, and his first ever green jacket. He was able to accomplish that on his 19th hole of Sunday in the playoff, defeating Justin Rose to complete the career Grand Slam, 11 years in the making, and finally call himself a Masters champ. Keith, you are our boots on the ground at Augusta all week long as you were following the action on Sunday, as everybody was watching Rory deal with those demons and finally put on the green jacket. What were you seeing? What was your reaction? What was the buzz and atmosphere like around Augusta?
Well, Ben, Donnie, it was the ultimate hyperbole overnight on Saturday. It was Bryson, it was Rory, and what it really turned into, I mean, who would have known at the turn when Rory's suddenly up four shots, and it basically it looks like it's going to be another one of those snooze fest Sundays at Augusta National. Well, Rory didn't want to have it. He dunks the ball in the water on 13, and next thing you know, we have Ludwig, the kid, we have Justin Rose, 44 years old, we have Rory. They're all tied for the lead. It is absolutely madness. It's chaos. And, you know, the good and the bad of Augusta National. The bad is that you can't really follow the leaderboard. You have to be sitting in a position where one of those mechanical leaderboards lets you know when it's time to have the story unfold. And whether they show the clip on 18 of when the scores are posted and the crowd reacting because they're five holes away from the leaders. I mean, that is one of the most fabulous aspects of the grounds there, because you hear these roars coming around and it's almost like, you know, there's tanks coming over the horizon. You hear people yelling and you're saying, oh my God, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And the anticipation and the anxiety, it was so over the top. You know, I don't know if it was one of the best Masters I've ever seen, but it was definitely one of the best Sundays at the Masters that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is a unique experience. They tried to relay it through television where they show like one of the greens and you're just waiting for the red numbers, the black numbers to show up there. And then the wild cheers where you know that guy actually did an eagle, actually had a birdie, a par, or a double bogey at worst there where you hear the groans. But I do want to talk about Rory McIlroy, because on Thursday, I had a ticket in for him to get a top 20. Not in the tournament, a top 20 on day number one. He was cruising, Keith, on Thursday afternoon, then folded up shop late. And I said to myself, there is no way Rory goes to bed tonight, wakes up on Friday morning, and feels like he can win this Masters tournament, because he probably already lost it. To rebound with a 66 on Friday and a 66 on Saturday, that's unbelievable. You talk about mental fortitude to be able to hold out. Rory was fantastic with that on the weekend.
Oh, he was unbelievable. I mean, he had to listen to his own words. He wanted to take it 72 holes, one hole at a time. Absolutely fantastic. And he knew, Donnie, that since Valhalla in 2014, when he won his last major championship, he's had 21 top 10s in the majors over those 11 years. I mean, that's a lot of times that he's been in the mix and he's made some mistakes. Now, I'm sure he wasn't happy about making two double bogeys, or maybe even making two more double bogeys in the final round and still winning. But you know what? The guy kept his head down and he kept going. It's kind of like the perseverance. You know, I'm not a huge Rory guy, but I got to give the guy a ton of credit. He believes in perseverance. He talks about it in the press room. And then, of course, he comes through. He makes 33s on his scorecards in 72 holes. 33s, guys, along with four double bogeys. Mm. It's insane. Two sixes, two sevens there. If you told him at the beginning of the week he was going to have two sevens on his card, he'd absolutely say, there's no way I'm winning this thing. But he pulled it off, and it's a testament to the fact that over the last 11 years, when he's come close, he's always tried to keep himself in it.
And we saw Rory McIlroy become the first ever golfer to make four doubles or worse at the Masters and still put on that green jacket in Butler Cabin. That mental fortitude was tested on Sunday, and it seemed as though some of those mental skeletons in the closet might win the day. Rory did in the playoff hall on Sunday evening at Augusta. Keith, the first ever golfer to make four double bogeys or worse and win a green jacket, the sixth ever golfer to win the career Grand Slam. A victory on Sunday in finally putting on the green jacket. What does it do for Rory McIlroy's legacy in the history of this great game?
Well, you know, five major championships, that puts him in the same spot with probably one of his heroes, Seve. It puts him in the modern spot next to Brooks at five. Phil, he's chasing still. He's one short of Phil at six. Arnold Palmer's at seven. You know, we've got Tom Watson at eight with a couple other guys. And the reason I bring this up, guys, is that if there was a year where you wanted like a 1,000-pound gorilla lifted from your shoulders and you were Rory McIlroy in really, really fine career form, it is these venues that we have coming up. Quail Hollow, he's won there four times, followed by Oakmont. Now, Oakmont, the U.S. Open, it was not his greatest in 2016. He missed the cut, but that's a bomber's paradise. We know that. He's got the skill set for that. He's got a zillion top tens in the last decade in the U.S. Open, more than any other players that will be in the field. And then the next one, Royal Portrush, where he grew up in Northern Ireland. I mean, we could be talking about an actual Grand Slam without a ton of hyperbole, guys. If he continues to play like this, he, Bryson, Scotty, Xander, these guys are going to be a part of all the storylines for these next three major championships. And there's no doubt in my mind, now that he has this green jacket, he's going to play a little bit freer in these championships and not miss those 3-foot, 9-inch putts. I think he's a serious threat to become more than a generational golfer.
Two plus majors this year. You saw it right there, plus 160. That would be just one more. The career Grand Slam. How about the calendar Grand Slam at 95-1? Keith, we saw the letting out of emotions in that great burden and weight off of Rory's shoulders immediately on the 18th green in the playoff hole on Sunday. Maybe that will mean something for the remainder of this major championship schedule. Elsewhere on the PGA Tour, big week down in South Carolina. Keith previews the Heritage next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So Rory wins a green jacket for the first time in his career and completes the career Grand Slam. But the PGA Tour does not stop. A big event this week down in Hilton Head, South Carolina, for the RBC Heritage. That's where Keith Stewart is live, joining us once again for a second straight segment here on the Early Line. Keith, let's start with a natural follow-up. How do these guys, after playing at Augusta in the year's first major, with all the pageantry and tradition in the stakes that we saw on Sunday, how do the best golfers in the world play at Augusta and then turn it around and keep that energy high for a new week on the PGA Tour?
Ben, it's a fantastic question, and it leads me right into Keith's keys for this week for Harbortown Golf Links and for this signature event. Now, they have a no cut, so that gives them a little time, an extra time with which to kind of carry their game through. You know, Thursday, round one, manage your energy, and then by the time you get to the weekend, I'm sure they're all recovered. But as you know, when I look at the keys for this week, number one is how much energy did you spend at Augusta National? Like, what is your deficit? And a lot of these guys, although some played well, like a Xander Schauffele, he finished T8, but he was never really in contention. So he saved some energy. And Scotty talked about this in his press conference yesterday. He goes, you know, I was in it for a while. And when I was in it, you know, I am expending a lot of mental and physical strain. And I'm glad that at the end, well, if it wasn't going to work out, that, you know, I could kind of cruise. Teddy and I were like, we're just going to cruise, you know, in here, get done and get out of here and get on to Hilton Head. So it is a major concern. Another thing, though, is that, and it's kind of ironic, but 10 of the last 13 winners here at the RBC have played in the Masters. So maybe the strain and stress of the whole thing, if you're not in contention, is a very good warm-up for what they need to do down here, which gets me to my third Keith's Keys, which is that you have to be an absolutely stellar iron player. We know Augusta National is a second-shot golf course, and these guys are going to need that same skill down here. The greens are the second smallest on the PGA Tour behind Pebble Beach at an average of 3,700 square feet. You got to be good with your targets coming from the fairways and maybe just off on the sides.
Yeah, it's a beautiful golf course. I've walked it before, but I do like the PGA Tour also, Keith. Back in the day, it was like, okay, you're playing the Masters, you take the next week off, which was the RBC. Now, being one of those preeminent golf courses that they sort of up the ante, we get some really good guys on the leaderboard just to start the week. But as you said, it's a unique golf course. It has some iconic images like the lighthouse there. How's the weather this weekend and maybe an impact on that advantage?
Well, Donnie, as you can see, it's a little breezy this morning. Now, it's 10 a.m. Eastern time. That yesterday afternoon, I did a hit, and it was really windy. And it's going to be windy this afternoon when I'm with Carver and the guys. We are at the tip of the island. We're at the southern tip of Hilton Head. So even if you're using your weather apps and you're trying to bet from home and you're like, oh, it doesn't look that windy, 8 to 10 miles an hour, you know what? The weather app's not sitting here. My hair is, okay? Guys, it's blowing. It's going to be beautiful out here, but the fact of the matter is that sunny and 65 degrees at the tip of this island is going to be a little bit of a challenge because these are corridors here, and guys are going to have to hit their targets and manage their trajectory with that golf ball with the wind that we're going to feel all weekend.
So, Keith, we asked a similar question, the response, the bounce back from Augusta down to Hilton Head for the RBC Heritage last year when we focused on one guy who had just won his second green jacket in a three-year span in Scottie Scheffler, who decided to still play in the RBC Heritage and then won the RBC Heritage at Harbortown Golf Links in 2024. No Rory in the field this week, and thus Scottie Scheffler, a very short favorite in front of everybody else at plus 360. Scottie Scheffler in contention on Sunday at the Masters, but not really in it late as you shared. What's your outlook for Scottie atop the odds board to hopefully being atop the leaderboard come Sunday afternoon?
Ben, we live in a world of recency bias, and everyone wants Scottie to win nine more times this year like he did last year. I think they forget the fact that that was pretty historic. And I've been guilty of this myself, thinking that Scottie is just going to snap back into it. But at his presser yesterday, he definitely has the same sentiment that we have heard for about 6 weeks out here on tour, and that is, I'm just not happy with where my game is at. Now, we know that Scottie can find it probably pretty quickly, but that miss left with the driver that he had at Augusta that he's had all Q1 is, if that's still here, that's going to be a problem because he's going to be rattling around the pines. And he's just not been as sharp. And there's a couple other guys that I do like that I think are a little bit sharper. And you know what? They're not as scared of Scottie right now. And I think he's aware of that too.
30 seconds, Keith. Give us the early leans here on the early line for this week on the tour.
For the second week in a row, guys, I'm going with Xander, right? He was eighth at Augusta, and he spent no energy. The approach game is really, really solid right now, and this is a well-rounded test, and he is one of the most well-rounded golfers in the world. Second guy, Wyndham Clark, last year, top third here, and he missed the cut at Augusta, plus 5,500. I know Donnie loves those odds, right? He's always good on positional golf courses, just like RBC Heritage.
Keith, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the week at Hilton Head. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The second night of the NBA postseason comes your way on this Wednesday. Another doubleheader of action in the NBA play-in tournament. Our 9-10 games tonight in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. Of course, tonight, the loser has their season come to a close. The winner gets ready for a turnaround on Friday, either to visit Memphis in the Western Conference or Atlanta in the Eastern Conference, needing two wins in this play-in tournament to become the 8th seed in the actual playoffs that begin on Saturday. DRS, let's start with our opening game of the two tonight inside the United Center, the Madhouse on Madison in Chicago. It's the Bulls playing host to the Heat. Again, both teams very comfortable in these play-in tourney spots. They have been here, I believe, in at least two of the last 3 years, if not all three in a row. It is a money line pick'em tonight between Chicago and Miami. So the question is rather simple. Who wins this game and advances to Atlanta on Friday night?
The interesting part about it, too, is that the line itself is only minus one, and I continue to bring that up. You take a look at, you know, at the FanDuel Sportsbook around other spots here. It's heavy tickets. 7 out of 10 tickets coming in on the Chicago Bulls for the most part of it, which I do agree with. But also, why is 70% of the tickets coming in at a minus one? Like, are we leaving the Miami Heat out of this point? Now, they do have a pedigree there with their head coach, world championships. We'll have them prepared. I get it. But I'm leaning more on the home court advantage at this point here, and I do think the Bulls do have an advantage in that spot. Now, Tyler Hero, can he have a great game tonight? Bam Adebayo, absolutely. But if I just look man for man and where they're playing, I do think it's a pretty cheap price on the Chicago Bulls. You're asking them just to win the game and get the cover, which is pretty simple, at a minus one. You look at the total end of it, right? A 222 down to 219, you know, 219 and a half, depending on where it's going to end up tonight. I do agree with, again, the Miami Heat footprint is not, let's get into a race, let's just play good defense, let's measure up and hit our shots when we can. But just getting back to the original prognosis for me, I haven't wavered. When I saw this line come out, I thought it was a stone-cold Heat line, which if you're just betting lines, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
But I do think the Bulls are the better team in this situation tonight.
Yeah, DRS, I'm all in on Chicago. I bet the Bulls on that money line. Price at minus 120. Earlier in the week, it was minus 112, minus 104. Total has been pretty steady around 219 since we did see a move from when it opened. I really like this Bulls team. I think Chicago not only wins tonight, I'm going to pick Chicago to beat the Hawks if the Bulls do, in fact, win and head to Atlanta on Friday. The Bulls are playing with a lot of momentum right now. They won 15 of their final 20 to end out the regular season. And a lot of that has been the spark from the young stars in the Windy City, Josh Giddey and Kobe White. I really like how Chicago is playing, and because it is a pickup needing just an outright win, we'll back the Bulls this evening. Now, DRS, I'm not going to think the Bulls then beat the Hawks and all of a sudden are this pesky 8 seed about to make the Cleveland Cavaliers life an absolute living you-know-what to start off the postseason, but I do think Chicago plays well tonight, wins this game outright against the Heat, and then maybe makes some noise come Friday. And as we look at this matchup, DRS confirmed 3 consecutive years for both the Heat and the Bulls in the Eastern Conference play-in tournament. A lot of that squad for Miami still here, despite the fact that Jimmy Butler took his play-in expertise to Golden State, as we saw with a game-best 38 points last night. You still have Tyler Hero, and you still have some players in this spot for the Heat, including Bam Adebayo, that can play some good basketball. Andrew Wiggins, who came back to Miami in that Jimmy Butler deal. Those are the 3 highest points props tonight for Miami. On the other side for the Bulls, those guys I mentioned, Kobe White, Josh Giddey, and of course the veteran big in Nikola Vucevic. That's why I like Chicago to come through this evening.
Yeah, and also a lower total there. So for me, if I'm looking at player props, like if you expect the Miami Heat to win, it probably is going to go through Tyler Hero, right? There's a lot more options to me if you're looking for options for scoring-wise, at least with the Chicago Bulls. So I would land on Hero, like 3-plus made threes at a minus 138 price if you think they're going to win. It's really just a correlation. Yeah. But it's one of those where, like, I don't want to be wrong. Okay, let's say Kobe White over 22 and a half points. He scores 20 points, but the Bulls to win. Like, man, I told you the Bulls would win this game. Why did I just go with a prop bet along with it? But I feel stronger on the opposite side by saying I think Tyler Hero has to be that linchpin for the Miami Heat for them to win this basketball game, or at least just, I say, be competitive here. So if I'm looking at a Bulls props perspective, I don't like it all that much. I just like the Bulls. But if I'm looking from a player prop perspective from the Heat, I think there's better options here because I just think the offense has to flow exactly through Tyler Hero and get good production out of Tyler Hero for them to win this basketball game on the road.
Yeah, and Donnie, we have seen Tyler Hero put up a lot of points for Miami following the All-Star break. He has not shot the three all that well, though. He's only really made 2 threes in most of his final games to end out the regular season. This year, from three-point range for Tyler Hero, looking at the entirety of this season, 37.5%. Again, can still fill it up from beyond the arc, but the scoring production has been in other areas. Josh Giddey, by the way, for Chicago to record a triple-double, plus 190. Final 6 games that Giddey played in the regular season, a triple-double in half of those 6, 3 of 6. He has started started to become that guy, much in the way where you almost expect a triple-double, not quite to the proficiency of Nikola Jokic, but plus 190, of course, is not the steepest number on a player to record a triple-double. And Donnie, I mentioned how the Bulls won 15 of their last 20 games to round out the regular season, including two wins against Miami, one in South Beach, one in Chicago in the final week of the regular season, both outright as an underdog for the Bulls. They are comfortable playing this team. Again, it's why I like Chicago tonight. Let's get to our nightcap in California's capital. That's the Kings and the Mavericks. Sacramento now a 4.5-point favorite tonight against Dallas. Total stands at 214. Line earlier in the week was 5 in favor of the Kings. A little bit of buyback to the way of the Mavs. And that total dropping down to just 214 on this Wednesday morning. Donnie, you said earlier in the week you were ready to lay the number with Sacramento.
Yeah.
You've kind of changed your tune. How come?
Yeah, I just figure that we're going to get a close game here, and I just want to lean on the points because it's not a foregone conclusion that one side is going to win this game. And I didn't even think we had a foregone conclusion last night in the Western Conference in that game in Golden State. I just saw the points and said, two quality basketball teams, stars on both sides, let's see how it plays out. And it worked out in my favor where you got the cover for the Memphis Grizzlies, but you probably thought the Warriors would win that game. I sort of have that same vibe. Like, I've liked the Kings all season long. I like their starting lineup. They have home court advantage. They should theoretically win the game. And at the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, 61% of those spread bets coming in on Sacramento, the home team, 71% of the total money coming in on Sacramento. But also, that line really not moving in the right direction. So if you're just reading line movement tied to how many bets are coming in and the money, this line should be Kings 5.5, maybe 6.5 at this point. And it hasn't moved and theoretically has come down a half point. I just look at Anthony Davis. He's the end all be all, right? He's going to play great defense. If he's on sure. offense, can be damn near unstoppable, which is what you like at this point. So that's why I started having that fold over, say, if I'm just looking at this game as a coin flip, to be honest, then why don't you just take the 4.5 points and you can still lose this game as a Mavericks backer and still cover the point spread. That's what's changed up for me. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that yes, the Kings win, which means they automatically win by 5+ points. That has me turning back a little bit more to the Dallas Mavericks right now.
Yeah, DRS, you mentioned it. 71% of the money in terms of the spread betting backing Sacramento. And yet the line has worked against the Kings on the FanDuel Sportsbook. We would consider that a fishy type of line that maybe, despite the public sentiment backing the Kings at home tonight, the Mavericks are going to be in this game. Our coach JY broke it down earlier, just saying it's been a disastrous season for Dallas. And he's correct, right? Luka Doncic gone in that blockbuster deal that has still left a fan base in a city stunned. Kyrie Irving out for the remainder of this season. Anthony Davis missed a good chunk of time after being acquired by the Mavericks. And I understand what JY is mentioning, that Sacramento has so much more depth. Domantas Sabonis now back and healthy and performing well. DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine. I get all of it for the Kings. Believe me. I still think the biggest X factor tonight and the guy that could turn the fate of this game is Anthony Davis, now back and healthy. We'll talk why on the other side of the break. But down the stretch, after he returned from the adductor strain that he suffered in his Dallas debut, in the 8 games that he played for the Mavs, Dallas won 5 of them, including a couple outright as an underdog. A couple of ways to approach the props for tonight's play-in tourney action. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Tonight in California's capital, our nightcap of a doubleheader of 9-10 matchups in the play-in tournament. The Sacramento Kings hosting the Dallas Mavericks. I have already said I bet the Mavs +5 earlier in the week, market working my way despite public love backing Sacramento. And Donnie, if Dallas is going to stay within this number tonight, even if they lose outright, or if they pull off the outright upset to head to Memphis on Friday evening, for me it focuses on one guy solely. That's Anthony Davis for the Mavericks. Yeah. His points prop, the highest for tonight's matchup in Sactown, 26.5, a -370 number to record a double-double. Anthony Davis, since returning from the injury that he suffered in his Dallas debut, has played in 8 games. The Mavericks have won 5 of them. In his last 4, he has scored at least 23 points. Here's another way I might approach this game. If I think Anthony Davis is Dallas's best shot of winning this game outright, mm-hmm. plus 164, that updated and live money line price, how about AD to score 30 plus? It's plus 182. The Mavs could lose. Anthony Davis could still get to 30, and I cash that ticket. I don't think it's the worst way if my belief in the Mavericks focuses on one guy. That, of course, is the Brow.
Yeah, you're certainly going to pay a premium, no doubt about it. And look at the differences here. 25 and 10 tonight, if you bet that on the FanDuel Sportsbook, you're looking at maybe like an even money number, which is crazy. But if you do up the rebounds just by two and go 25 and 12, it's a plus 156. So if you do ladder above 10 rebounds and or more than 25 points, you can be looking at a pretty penny at that point. But also understand this. You see that total is really low. So if we're getting like 30 points out of Anthony Davis, that's a big part about that offense for the Dallas Mavericks. The expectations aren't going to be that. It is supposed to be a high-scoring game. But I agree with you there. This is one of those games where it's like, hey, Anthony Davis, it's much more than, look, I know I'm the leader of the team, I'm the best player, but there's a pride to this saying, I was traded for Luka Doncic. Like, these are the times in single-game eliminations, per se, and a national spotlight where I need to shine for my ball club and also for the general manager that brought me in and continuously told me, you are the backbone of this franchise for the next couple of years and see you perform. So I would be surprised if we got a cowering performance outside of injury. It's like, 17, 6, and 5 or something out of Anthony Davis. He needs to perform and perform well, and he should. It's not an unbelievable defense for Sacramento he's going up against, or an immovable force in Domantas Sabonis on the low block. He should get his tonight.
Yeah, and for the Kings, DRS, Zach LaVine also acquired near the trade deadline from Chicago. I believe in the deal that sent De'Aaron Fox to Sacramento in that three-way extravaganza or the multiple-team trade. He's been really good in the seven games he's played in the month of April, averaging better than 27 points per game, has gone over his points prop with at least 25 in five of those seven. I'm not trying to knock the Kings. I do think Sacramento can stay in this basketball game. They are the 4.5-point home favorite. I'm just back in the Mavericks tonight. Any closing thoughts on the play-in tournament before we move on?
Both of these games should be afternoon games. Like, remember like COVID basketball where they're playing like playoff games in the middle of the afternoon? Yeah, put them in the middle of the afternoon. It adds intrigue here. Like, okay, let me watch this. Then I can watch the nightly stuff and do what I have to do. It just adds a little bit more of an element. Like, if this game were to tip off at 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock, we would all be invested. Like, we play afternoon day baseball games. Like, nobody's going to show up. Yes, they will show up to that arena, and it will be great and fantastic, and everybody can enjoy and watch. What's wrong with that?
That'd be kind of fun to put a different emphasis on the play-in tournament, especially these games where the loser has their season come to a close. The winner still needs one more win to get into the actual NBA playoffs starting this weekend. Again, winner of tonight's game in Chicago between the Bulls and the Heat will visit the Hawks on Friday in Atlanta. Winner of tonight's game in Sacramento between the Kings and the Mavericks will visit the Memphis Grizzlies on Friday night as well, trying to become the 8th seed in their respective playoff sets. DRS just over a week away from the 2025 NFL draft. 8 days to be exact. And there's a lot to figure out. How many quarterbacks in the first round? One of the main storylines. Where does Shedeur Sanders slot in the opening round? Mm-hmm. And plenty more we'll discuss on the other side of the break. But I want to make sure you saw this story from last night. Cam Ward, playing video games, playing Fortnite, was asked some questions as he was live streaming. Asked about the top wide receivers that he considers in the NFL or his favorite running backs. He listed a top four for both positions. Two of his top four wide receivers and number one overall in the National Football League, Tennessee's Calvin Ridley and the Titans' Traylon Burks, who has not been great since being a first-round pick in his NFL career. Two of Cam Ward's top four NFL running backs currently, that would be Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears, who has been in Tennessee the past 3 years. It does sound as though Cam Ward understands where his bread is about to be buttered and where he is about to start his NFL career, going first overall to Tennessee.
You know what? I'm glad you actually took some time to explain that, because as I was listening, saying like I look at the odds of minus 20,000 to be the number one overall pick, I'm like, I'm about to change this to plus 100 if this is his thought process on how the NFL works. But now that you I wasn't actually putting the correlation because he was getting drafted by Tennessee and this is what you have to do. So, all right, Cam Ward, you almost had me like it was April Fool's at that point right now. Like, what are we actually doing? But now that I understand it, I'm okay with it at that point. So there you go. Because I was about to get a rip of a real hot take before I understood where you were going with this.
Yes, it was Cam Ward understanding the assignment, if you will.
Yes.
If you don't believe in the odds makers, at minus 20,000 for Ward to go first overall on next Thursday night in Green Bay to the Tennessee Titans, then trust in the way that he understands what he has to do, listing Calvin Ridley as the best receiver in the National Football League in front of Jamar Chase. And Tony Pollard and Tyjae Spears is two of the best running backs in the National Football League. I mean, Calvin Ridley is not number one. Had a really good first year in Nashville, and I think at his best is a very good wide receiver. Treylon Burks in the top four. That's crazy. That guy has stunk throughout his National Football League career after being a first-round pick from Arkansas. Yeah.
He really has, but when you talk about Cam Ward coming to town, like if you're a wide receiver, a tight end, and you're like, I get this guy because I just had a guy who couldn't hit the side of a barn, you know, in the middle of a, you know, whatever, or hit like water out of a boat at that point. Like this has to be absolutely amazing. Like I'm going to run around and get the football. How? I better work out hard this offseason now. Fantastic.
DRS, four teams around the NFL that will enter 2025 as of this moment with the lowest win totals in number 5.5. The Giants and the Browns, the juice is on the under. The Titans and the Jets, juice on the over.
Yeah.
I don't think so, my friend. DRS, we bid you adieu as we get you ready for the money line. They were trying to get you out here early. Enjoy, DRS. We'll talk tomorrow. More of the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
8 days out from the 2025 NFL Draft. Opening night, opening round next Thursday, April 24th, live from Titletown in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Should be a great scene outside of Lambeau Field. In fact, we should figure out where the exact set is for the 2025 NFL Draft. You would have to assume outside of Lambeau, but we'll get you that in just a little bit. How about the actual odds that we have for next week's NFL draft? The market's starting to open up in a large way early this week. We have talked first round picks, what that means for the amount of quarterbacks we will see on the opening night. We have talked a ton of projections, Shador Sanders storyline and all of that. How about the odds to be the fourth and fifth overall pick, which are now out and available on the FanDuel Sportsbook? Because really the top three is where things are interesting. We know Cam Ward, more than likely, just waiting official confirmation by the time we get to next Thursday night as a minus 20,000 favorite, going to go first overall. The Browns hold that second overall pick. Travis Hunter, a minus 310 favorite. The Giants hold the third overall pick. Abdul Carter, minus 240 to go third overall. Fourth overall, it's the Patriots. New England, in its first year under Mike Vrabel, looking to build and fill out the roster in a variety of capacities. They don't need a quarterback, though, of course, trusting Drake May. Fifth overall, under new rookie head coach Liam Cohen, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. Cohen's main task, reinvigorating the career of Trevor Lawrence. What does Jacksonville elect to do with that fifth overall pick? To build out the team around their QB. Might Jacksonville look to the defensive side of the football? That's what the odds makers are projecting here. Mason Graham, the very talented interior D lineman out of Michigan, is a minus 145 favorite to be that fifth overall pick. Again, as we have shared a variety of the times, this is the latest end of the league year as it is officially underway now for the last month and a half or so, that all 32 NFL franchises hold on to their original first round pick. You would think, although the Patriots and the Jags have a ton of team needs to fill early and often in this NFL draft, they're not necessarily dead set on what they might do at fourth and fifth overall. Would either of these teams look to trade back come draft night to accumulate more draft capital to fill out the roster that needs it in plenty of spots? That, I guess, would be the conversation. Mason Graham, not just a one minus 145 favorite, by the way, to go fifth overall, the pick the Jags have right now. Mason Graham is a hefty favorite at minus 700 to be the first defensive lineman drafted in the 2025 NFL draft. You see the second best price, a 5-1 number on Armon Membu, the offensive defensive tackle out of Missouri that wowed at the NFL scouting combine. There was a good portion of this draft cycle, really up until the last week or so, that Membu was not just looked at more as a top five pick, but as the first O-lineman to hear his name called next week in Green Bay. I have told you a few times I've headed over to our studios in New Jersey, and I can bet the NFL draft odds what I have elected to do. Shedeur Sanders to go to the Steelers at a 9-1 number. It's now plus 550. Pittsburgh to draft a quarterback with its first position drafted. It was plus 340 then. It's plus 270 now. Something I am glad I jumped on when I did. Will Campbell, the outstanding blindside blocker out of LSU, to be the first O-lineman drafted at a minus 110 price, but Armon Membu out of Mizzou had a slightly better number then at minus 120. Will Campbell is now a minus 240 favorite to be the first O-lineman drafted, near a minus money $2 favorite to be the fourth overall pick, to be that staple of the O-line to protect Drake May in New England. Again, as we look at where the NFL draft odds are right now. Second overall pick, Travis Hunter at minus 310. Third overall pick, Abdul Carter at minus 240. Browns at 2, Giants at 3. Despite some late chatter, I really expect that to be the path that we see come 8 days from now on a Thursday night. I would be shocked if the Browns do not draft Travis Hunter second overall. We'll see about his position in the NFL. And if the Giants do not select Abdul Carter at minus 240, there's been reports on Shedeur Sanders, and his number is shorter, but it's still plus 420 to find his way to New York. And because our producer extraordinaire, Joe Friso, tracked down this information, the draft theater for the 2025 NFL draft will be built in a parking lot at Lambeau Field, one of the historic venues, of course, in all of sports and in the National Football League. It should be a great theater for the 2025 NFL Draft, just over a week away. The Early Line returns tomorrow, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, during a Thursday on Sportsgrid.